Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021. Former director of the SAD Institute says he is on the run after the government shut down his institution.
The state is looking for me. They have used my office and threatened my staff as a way of trying to get me to surrender so that they can arrest me.
And a medical officer is killed in Jonglei State.
What happened is that some group of young men who came and killed a health worker in the health facility, they went and mobilized themselves, came and found the person in the health facility, beat him to death and ran.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former director of the SAD Institute says the government closed down the think tank because of several reasons. Abraham Akech Awolich, who is now a member of a new group calling itself the People's Coalition for Civil Action, says SAD Institute is being punished because of his individual decision to speak on behalf of the Sudanese people. Awolich says he is on the run because government operatives are looking for him after they closed down SAD Institute.
The state is looking for me. They have used my office and threatened my staff as a way of trying to get me to surrender so that they can arrest me and put me to the Blue House together with my colleague Kwela Gurukwel. But I knew that they were looking for me, so I had taken cover in a safe place. They went to the office of the SAD Institute and rounded up their staff. Some of them ran away. They were chased all the way to one of the military officers' office where they took cover. And the senior members, specifically my colleague, who is acting as the managing director of the SAD Institute, Dr. Augustino Ting, was taken in to the Blue House to be questioned about my activities and whether the SAD Institute had sat together and made this decision, and I only signed on their behalf, which is totally not the case. There is never a collective decision of the institution to get engaged in activities such as this. It is always an individual decision. While Augustino was there in the Blue House, he called me and said that if I were to come and report myself in, then that's when they would leave the institute and their staff alone. But I told them that no, I'm not going to come out. I don't want to be silenced. I will continue to speak for the coalition.
You say that you joined the coalition as an individual and not as a member of the SAD Institute. Why would the government then proceed and shut down SAD Institute?
Well, for three reasons. One, I was the managing director of the SAD Institute. And so for me to engage in this activity, they don't like that. So SAD Institute is being punished through what they call guilt by association. Number two, Dr. Jok Madud Jok, who is the former managing director of the SAD Institute and who is also a very sharp critic of the government, is the other reason why SAD Institute is being shut down. And it was a month ago that Augustino and I were called in to go and answer questions about why Jok Madud would be writing negative things about the government when he is a member of the SAD Institute. And we said he was also a former undersecretary of the government. So have you questioned the ministry for which he worked? Why do you have to question the SAD Institute? We have always published articles that are not personal opinions. These are research papers, and the government has never complained. So the comments that Jok Madud make on the social media are his personal comments.
Who called you and your colleague to go and explain about Jok Madud Jok's writings on the social media?
It's somebody called Gabriel Gar Dell, and he's the chief of protection division within the national security. He sent in his two men to come and call me and Augustino to come to his office. This is the second reason. The third reason is that since the SAD Institute played the intellectual backstopping to the national dialogue leadership, there is a general belief that I, as a person representing the SAD Institute, was behind the very critical reports that were produced by the National Dialogue, and therefore the government was already bitter. And I know this because there were people that talked directly to Director General of National Security, who was bitter about the CERT Institute having produced this report. And maybe the fourth element is that we have always been critical anyway in our publications.
Talking about the social media, I also read some of your postings, and you're saying you are on the run. Who is chasing you?
I know this because while my colleague was at the National Security House, Blue House, he was made to call me to ask where I was and that he and the National Security were looking for me, especially where my residence was. And of course, I knew that early yesterday, my colleague Kwela Burekwe was arrested. And so that could only mean that they are looking to arrest me. And the intention, obviously, is to shut me up so that the Coalition for Civil Action dies out without a voice.
Abraham, I grew up in Juba, and that town is really very small for you to hide in. Are you sure you are safe in Juba?
I have lived in Juba for a long time. I can dig a small hole where I can dodge the state for a day or two before they smell where I am. And so I'm maximizing that time period.
And how effective is the operation of the coalition from a hiding place?
We can tell you we are operating at the maximum capacity. Our phones are working and our internet is working. So we have not been affected at all. We have simply just not been in the public place, but we are working 24 hours full capacity.
What do you mean by operating at full capacity? What are some of your next course of action? What is cooking?
We are going to set a D-Day very soon where we will massively bring our people to the street to demand change in the Republic of South Sudan. And that is to demand the resignation of the leaders and demand the initiation of a new transition that will bring in all the political forces and the armed forces and to prepare for the next election. We are doing this because we are convinced beyond reasonable doubt that the current RRCs has been killed deliberately by the government and the opposition forces have capitulated. They have given in and they are simply just going with the flow.
Let's be a little bit upfront and candid here. How would you confront the government?
We will simply flock to John Garang Mausoleum, to the parliament, and shut down the whole government until our demands are met. We have the numbers to do that. We have the support of our military and our police and the National Security Service. So if anyone raises hands against the people of South Sudan, they will be staring in the face very serious consequences.
That's Abraham Awolich, member of the People's Coalition for Civil Action. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location in Juba earlier today. Authorities in Jonglei State have arrested four people suspected of taking part in the killing of a health worker in Jonglei State. The commissioner of Duke County says the deceased clinical officer was the only medical staff running a health facility in the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Duke County Commissioner John Chatim says the attackers beat the clinical officer with sticks until he died on Monday. Chatim says police have arrested at least four suspects and the search continues for three other suspects who are on the run.
What happened is that some group of young men who came and killed a health worker in the health facility, they went and mobilized themselves, came and found the person in the health facility, beat him to death and ran. We have arrested four suspects and the rest are still on the run. We are not yet sure about the motive, but the investigations are ongoing.
Commissioner Chatim says the motive surrounding the murder are not clear and a police investigation is continuing.
The government is the one responsible for the law. If you have complaints, go through legal system and do not take law into your hands. We will make sure the rest who are on the run are arrested. They will be presented to court to explain themselves why they killed someone directly like that. The court will determine what will be done, if at all, they are found guilty.
Chatim says the victim was the only expert saving lives in the Duke Health facility. He says county authorities are struggling to hire another health worker. Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayana Kon confirms police are investigating the killing.
An investigation is not done. I think the investigation is going on. They will bring us the case when they finish it.
Lual Mathiang, a cousin to the deceased, describes the victim was a dedicated doctor and a humble medical professional who was the only breadwinner in the family.
He normally take care of their family and especially their kids. He take them to schools and even the responsibility of his family. That the one in charge. We are appealing to the government of South Sudan. Such a thing should not be tolerated, and such a thing needs the government to intervene. Now this is the fourth accident. Now this is the fourth incident which happened in the country. It happened in Bintiu. A doctor was killed. It happened in Nakobo. Two doctors were killed. It happened now in Fajut. Other doctor lost. And the doctors are the asset of the community. They are asset of the country.
Mathiang is urging authorities to quickly bring the perpetrators to justice. He also is appealing to the government to protect health workers. Last week, a humanitarian worker who was a medical doctor with Care International in Akobo County was killed by unknown gunmen. No arrests were made. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Lawmakers from the National Assembly and the Council of States were sworn in Juba on Monday as required by the revitalized peace agreement signed in 2018. 588 lawmakers out of 650 were sworn in Juba in a colorful ceremony. A senior SPLM official who presided over the occasion urged lawmakers to think and analyze the mission of restoring peace and stability in South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
I do hereby swear by Almighty God that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Republic of South Sudan and serve the people of the Republic of South Sudan.
It was all ululations, jubilations, and a sustained applause as hundreds of lawmakers took the oath of office at Juba's Freedom Hall on Monday. Chief Justice Chan Rich Madut swore in the new MPs. Family members, community representatives associated with the lawmakers, as well as friends and other party members, gathered inside the hall to witness the swearing-in. The event featured various groups participating in traditional dances using local instruments. Daniel Awet Akot, a senior member in the SPLM party, presided over the swearing-in ceremony.
I appeal to you, every one of you, the honorable members of this house, that promotion of peace, and I repeat peace, is the unity of all our efforts in all around South Sudan. If we maintain good peace, the unity will be magnified, and the suffering of our people will be diverted. It is only through unity of purpose and love of one another that we progress our country and secure the future for the young generation that have been saved after a long war.
30 lawmakers from the other political parties, or OPP, have not yet been sworn in. According to Albino Akol, a spokesperson of the OPP, the list of OPP members announced earlier on by President Kiir was revoked following an internal conflict in the party. Top religious leaders from various denominations, including the Muslim community, attended the event. Anglican Archbishop Justin Badi Arama told the lawmakers to focus on ensuring that services are delivered to citizens across the country.
Know that South Sudanese are watching you, are waiting and eagerly expecting you to bear fruits, good fruits, in the forms of good laws that promote justice, peace, and reconciliation in the communities. Laws that encourage service delivery to improve the life of the citizens who have suffered a lot in this country.
Many South Sudanese say the swearing-in was long overdue. According to the schedule for implementing the revitalized peace agreement, the South Sudan Transitional Parliament should have been reconstituted 8 months after the parties reconstituted the executive branch. Yesterday's event marked the confirmation of the speakers of both upper and lower chambers of South Sudan's parliament, the Council of States and the National Legislative Assembly per the 2018 peace agreement. Jemanunu Kumba of the SPLM party was confirmed by the lawmakers as Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, along with her deputy Nathaniel Oyet, who is a member of the SPLM IO party. Speaking at the event, Kumba called on all lawmakers to move forward on implementing the peace deal, which is far behind schedule.
We ought to remain reminded that we are partners to the peace agreement. Therefore, our guiding principles must include a spirit of cooperation, not competition, mutual understanding and not suspicion, compassion, not hate and jealousy, and peaceful approaches to issues, not conflict over issues.
One of the big remaining challenges for Parliament is where the lawmakers will conduct business. The current parliament building has been undergoing renovations for more than a year and is nowhere near completion. Again, Speaker Kumba.
Renovation work on the present parliament building has stalled for a long time. We, in liaison with the relevant authorities, will try to expedite the work so that a decent environment for the activities of parliamentarians is made available. For the time being, however, we appeal to the honorable members to be patient as we struggle to rectify this situation.
This reconstituted parliament under the requirements of the revitalized peace deal is the largest parliament South Sudan has had since independence. The number of lawmakers in the National Legislative Assembly rose from 400 to 550. It also increased the number of lawmakers in the Council of States from 50 to 100, making it impossible to seat all of the new lawmakers in the old parliament building. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at South Africa's initiatives to vaccinate its population. South Africa has received the first batch of almost 6 million COVID-19 vaccine doses donated by the United States. The consignment arrived Saturday, just as the African country, so far worst affected by the pandemic, was running out of jabs. Coronavirus has claimed the lives of more than 72,000 people in South Africa and infected almost 2.5 million. As Darren Taylor reports for VOA, the fatalities continue to spike in several regions.
So far, 7 million people in South Africa have received at least a single dose of vaccine, still well short of its target of 40 million of the 60 million population. Infectious diseases specialist Shabir Mahdi says both the Pfizer and the Johnson & Johnson jabs, the vaccines being rolled out in South Africa, offer a high degree of protection against serious COVID-19 two to 3 weeks after being given. But he says it's disappointing that not enough elderly people have been immunized.
Currently, the figure stands at about 65% of people above the age of 60 having been vaccinated. So 1/3 of them have not as yet been vaccinated, which is a problem because they make up close to 50% of all of the people that die of COVID-19 in South Africa.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mahdi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
We need to make a concerted effort to ensure that those that do have underlying medical conditions and people above the age of 60, we get a first dose into their arms as quickly as possible. And we want at least 90% of those individuals to be vaccinated before we're going to see some significant impact with the vaccines reducing death and hospitalization.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mahdi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
The reason we're seeing young people die this time around and ending up in hospital is just a function of the much larger number of people that are actually being affected in this particular wave compared with the number of young people that were infected in previous waves, simply because this variant, unfortunately, is much, much more transmissible and it's much easier to be infected if in an environment where the virus is circulating.
Mardi says the U.S. government's shipment of vaccines has arrived too late to ease South Africa's third outbreak, but should lessen the impact of the fourth resurgence expected in 3 to 4 months. He adds it's disturbing that despite the many deaths from COVID-19 in the country so far, some citizens continue to voice doubts about the jabs.
The core message to them is that the toss-up is between getting vaccinated and protected against COVID-19, despite there being a relatively very small risk of side effects, or remaining unprotected and actually dying of COVID-19. So you've got the choice to make, and that is especially if you're in that group of individuals that is at risk of developing severe disease. For me, the mathematics, the equation behind it is quite simple. The benefits of taking a chance with a vaccine which you might have some doubts about, which I don't have any doubts about, far exceeds any sort of risk that you might have in mind.
The government's resisting public pressure to make COVID-19 vaccinations compulsory because they otherwise put others at risk. But the administration of President Cyril Ramaphosa maintains it's every individual's right to decide whether to be immunized. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Still on health matters, some lactating mothers in South Sudan say they find it difficult to breastfeed their babies because of too many household tasks. Health workers are urging mothers of newborn babies to breastfeed for up to 6 months to help build the immunity of their children and protect them against common childhood illnesses. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
24-year-old Nibol Chwol, who resides in Juba's Gudele neighborhood, is the working mother of a 2.5-month-old baby. Chwol says it's not easy to breastfeed and finish all of her household chores.
To me, it has really been so hard that even when I want to go and assess for something outside, it's very hard that I have to leave the baby or look for someone else to come remain with the baby while I go to the office. A little bit, I have to run back quickly. It has just been so hard that sometimes if I'm supposed to go for something outside, even going for our own shopping, sometimes it's very hard.
Chwol, who works for Catholic Relief Services and is normally based in a yard, says she took 3 months leave in order to exclusively breastfeed her baby. She says she will return to her workstation in a week's time, but worries about how she will balance work with breastfeeding in a flood-affected area. A 33-year-old South Sudanese working mother, who prefers to be identified only as Sarah, has a 1.5-month-old baby. Sarah, who is a social worker, says mothers should be given at least 6 months to stay at home so they can breastfeed and care for their babies.
Breastfeeding has affected my work because right now I just need to focus on the baby and give all my time to the baby to make sure that the baby is not hungry. I have to breastfeed her all the time. I cannot even go for work. I cannot even do anything unless if she's sleeping. So, I have to bear with the situation right now. That is maybe after 6 months, that is when I will go back to work. But right now, everything, it is impossible.
Rita Juan, a senior nutrition inspector at the National Health Ministry, says the government has yet to approve policies that allow working mothers to have 6 months maternity leave in order to breastfeed their babies.
The maternity leave is 3 months, but we are working on it so that we'll also have 6 months for maternity leave so that at least the mother will sit at home with the child to exclusively breastfeed the child for 6 months, because we are saying a child is to be exclusively breastfed for 6 months.
Juan says the government is also working to draft a code governing the importation and marketing of breast milk supplements. Jessica Wude, a nutrition officer at the UN Children's Agency UNICEF, says mothers should initiate breastfeeding within the first hour of birth, followed by exclusive breastfeeding for at least 6 months.
We are talking as immediately when the baby is born. You know, the babies have a God-given talent that when they are they just come out of the mother's womb, they are looking for something to eat. And the first thing that they have to do is to look for the breast. And as soon as they are put on the breast, they begin to suckle.
Wude says mothers should breastfeed their babies continuously for 2 more years to prevent the onset of malnutrition among children in South Sudan. Eric Alain Atekbo, nutrition chief at UNICEF South Sudan, says his agency and the health ministry are working to provide the necessary therapeutic treatment and has set up feeding centers to reduce and prevent malnutrition among children.
Breast milk is the only thing the child needs for adequate growth. But also remember that beyond breastfeeding, we are talking about, we are in the country where malnutrition is huge and is tapping into the human capital of the country. This country is young and needs its people for its development. So we need to prevent the country, the citizens, from anything which will reduce the workforce. And malnutrition is a key eater of the workforce. So prevention of malnutrition beyond breastfeeding is also important.
Officials at the Health Ministry and UNICEF say although exclusive breastfeeding in South Sudan has increased from 45% in 2010 to 68% in 2020, 3 out of every 10 newborns in the country are not breastfed. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with some traditional Sudanese song. We've been listening to some traditional Sudanese song. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Al kurmu, Kesan, Abara, Wendo, Kesan, Abara, Wendo.
da da da.